Dr. Rock's radio show. Every Thursday night at 9 on raconteursnews.com. We go to 11.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on raconteursnews.com. You were listening to Crawling From The Wreckage there by Dave Edmonds, because we sent the doctor down to the cellar to fish out a few apposite tunes, and I really feel that we are starting now to see some solutions to the problems that we've been facing for so long. Before that, we had Just Because I Burnt My Bible, Baby, Don't Mean I'm Too Sick to Pray from the Alabama Three, and before that, Tattoo Vampire from the Blue Oyster Cult. Well, I'm extremely happy and excited to say that tonight's guest is Sandra Fecht, a lady who I only really came across quite recently, and one of her compadres, Fran. Thank you, Sandra and Fran, for coming and joining us on the show. We really appreciate it.
Pleasure to be here.
Yes, it certainly is.
I think it's a very exciting time to be talking about the things that we're going to be covering tonight. It's a deep and very, very disturbing part of the rabbit hole indeed. And I'd really like to cut to the chase straight away, because I think everybody's going to be aware that there have been, you know, repeated inquiries into satanic ritual abuse, and nothing untoward is found, that police officers apparently find nothing to investigate, and that certainly over here the court service and stuff don't seem to be finding anyone to prosecute. So against this background, Sandra, we are absolutely certain that this is happening, aren't we?
Well, I am. And I think that the more I chat with others through radio shows such as yours, and they connect with me, that I get dozens upon dozens of emails saying, yes, this happened to me and I can't get any help or justice. And so I've taken it on as a bit of a mission to inform people that it is going on, and to inform healers of all ilks of how to treat it.
Mm. Which, of course, is one of the great things, is to be able to come forward with a solution and not just being out there scaremongering, which we do see a lot of.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really important, because the end game, if I can give you a spoiler alert here, is that some of the groups are not doing this just out of a party trick or something, all these horrible things that they do. Each one of the terrible tortures that they do has a purpose, and part of the purpose is to take your energy and your soul. And you definitely need to keep your peace and walk through this in a dignified, elegant way. And it's possible.
Which again, I think, is a really important lesson generally, that walking in peace and in elegance is going to get much better results generally, as well as under the kind of serious circumstances you're addressing.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Every one of us.
Mm. And Fran, how did you get to meet Sandra? Because you've been working together for a while now, haven't you?
Yes, we've been working together for about 3 years. And I would start a little earlier in my life and say that I have always really valued the truth. And people would say the world was a certain way, and I could just never buy the official version of the world. And there were things in the external world to which that applied. And then there are things in my own internal personal experience that I had no explanation for why these things happened in my life, or hinted at things that happened in my life. So after the 2008 financial crash, I started a huge research initiative of going through everything I could find, and finally it ended up at satanic ritual abuse. And at the time, I was telling my hairdresser about it, who is a really marvelous Native man who has certainly shamanistic talent. And he said, you've got to meet this other person whose hair I do. And so Sandra and I got together for lunch. And because she was an open-minded psychotherapist at that time by designation, I decided to investigate and work with her about some memories in my own life, conscious memories that I brought to her. And those memories were beginning around grade 7 and grade 8. I started to have to relive scenarios of being tortured, of being involved in perverted sex, that sort of thing.
So you had some conscious memories anyway, and these other memories started just bubbling up spontaneously, did they?
Yes, they did.
Wow, that must have been very disturbing.
There is a certain resistance to believing that that could be a part of your own history. Mm-hmm. That's true.
I think what happens there, the research out of Berkeley, is that when an event happens that is too traumatizing, that the brain secretes cortisol and packs it away. And any time a part of the information is, shall we say, undigested, that it leaves a calling card, and the calling card is a symptom. And you might have bad dreams or get angry or drink or be unable to be sexually active or overeat. You know, there are a bunch of possible symptoms, you know, have a lot of pain, no energy, panic attacks, be triggered at certain times, whatever. So the information is in there. What I came to realize in my history of dealing with sexual abuse is that the conscious stuff is one thing, but at least you could have the ability at the time to process that part of it. It's the unconscious stuff that controls your behavior, and you really have to get to that. Mm. So I think that's what we started to do, Fran, was get to the unconscious stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, and that exercise in itself starts bringing forward further memories. Did you find, Fran, that the memories you were recovering were maybe helping to explain some of the things about your life you were previously puzzled by? Did any of it make more sense of what was going on?
Well, Ben, I never thought I was an exceptional person in any way. I only knew my life as I lived it, but there was a huge amount of depression. Seriously, I almost didn't get through. So many dysfunctional things going on, which, as we went forward, began to dissolve, and we began to get a larger picture. And yes, it did make sense.
Mm. Yeah.
The physical change in me alone and the emotional change and the mental change is quite remarkable.
So how is this manifesting in your everyday life, this improvement? What do you think are the major changes that you've seen?
Well, life has never been so interesting, so full of meaning, so full of potential. I would recommend this kind of investigation for anybody, whether this particular history is there or not, but it's miraculous.
Mm. That is actually one of the questions I wanted to ask, was that it seems to me that to a great extent we're all being mind controlled using trauma. Many of us have some or several of the symptoms you just outlined, Sandra. Is it possible that all of us could benefit from learning these protocols that you've been developing over the last 20 years or so?
Absolutely. I mean, I reference back to my experience in the Northwest Territories, where I met Native people who are basically still living off the land. This was, you know, back in the 1970 to 74, I lived up there. And they were so different from the way we are. They didn't have the church to intervene between them and God. They went directly to spirit, and spirit guided them. They didn't have watches to tell them what time to do things again. They would consult spirit, and if they felt like doing it at that time, they did it, and they did it, and if they didn't, they didn't do it. They were very inner directed. They hadn't been through industrialization and through wars, which leave generation upon generation of genetic trauma embedded. These people were so, the men were so loving and kind and grounded and brave, and the women the same way. So that they had their male and female really, really balanced. In our society, if we don't have another paradigm to look at, if we don't have another culture to explore, we don't know what we're trapped in. We're trapped in time and fear and shame and guilt and worrying about paying the mortgage. Do we have and do I have enough money to feed my baby properly? And it goes on and on and on. In those other cultures, they take care of one another. You know, you rise or fall as a community, and it's such a feeling of security. You know, we are trapped in our fear, and it's so monstrous, and we don't even see it.
It's great, isn't it? Because you were presumed, that was the beginning of your career, was it? That you were presumably quite young then. It's interesting that you got such an interesting and concrete demonstration of what life might be like.
Mm-hmm. No, I was 82 then. No, I'm just kidding. I was in my 20s back then. Mm. And yeah, I was very fortunate to have that experience, you know, and to meet people that still knew how to love because nature gave them everything they needed and they were part of it and they were an essential, valuable part and they were loved and they felt free. They could be who they were without any shame or comparison. We don't have that in our society. We're constantly told we're not pretty enough, athletic enough, rich enough, smart enough. You know, you name it. And we're always feeling that shame and so on, which, of course, is all part of the plan.
Yeah. I bet those guys didn't have to work 14 hours a day either.
Not at all. I mean, it's not an easy life when you live off the land. And I had people say that they preferred living in houses and settlements. But eventually the houses that were provided all became moldy. Everybody became sick. You know, I watched a generation of people go from a land and hunting off the land, you know, hunting in some cases for polar bear and so on, eating steel meat. And they were, honestly, I danced at one thing in Spence Bay. There was a community dance and I was up there dancing with some of the people who'd lived off the land. The back muscles were so big that my hand would hardly fit around it. And it was like kind of a shock, you know, because I wasn't used to that. And the people were so loving and generous. They were just lovely, lovely people. Then I watched them go from that base, heart-centered being to a people who had been moved to a community where there was nothing for them to eat. Their dogs had been shot so that they needed snowmobiles, but there was no work, you know, no economic base anymore. And they had nothing, and they only had to survive on the government pension, which they didn't get if they didn't send their children to residential school, by the way, where the kids, half of them died. And the only thing they could afford was flour, lard, sugar, and tea bags. That was it. And when you go from a high protein to a high carb diet, your teeth fall out, you get diabetes, you start to lose your vision.
Your immune system starts giving up.
Awful. And I watched people who were born in sealskin tents on the barrens go from that hunter nomadic life into the electronic age in one generation.
Good Lord. So you not only got to see an exemplar of what life might be like, but effectively you got a crash course in what is really being done to most of the Western world's population, really, in essence.
Totally. Yes, we think that, hey, they're just doing it to the native people or whoever. That is not true. They're doing it to all of us, but we are so far in it, we can't see the forest for the trees.
Mm. So, I mean, you must have started like the rest of us, presumably having never even heard of any of this stuff, let alone imagining what it might be like to be real. But you've moved over the years from that position to one of not only practical certainty about the facts of the matter, but also to be able to engage like positively and successfully in with the challenge, sort of moment by moment, it seems to me, as it presents itself. What was it like for you as a therapist to find out about this? How did that happen?
Well, I'm going to back up a bit and tell you, and I'll give you my chronology of awakening. And the Native people told me about the residential schools, and I looked at it as if it was some strange object I couldn't make any sense of. And it was like, those kids in those residential schools were raped and tortured and beaten if they used their own language. I mean, it was brutal. And I couldn't even begin to apprehend it. And when I went to work at a training school for girls in Ontario in the mid-70s, those young ladies, some of them had been prostituting since they were 9 years old, and we had no concept as a group of therapists. We would sit around scratching our heads and wondering what on earth they were all about. And we just had no treatment methods. And then in 1981, I started to take a training course with somebody named Cindy Blazewski, who was an expert who was brought up from the States. And she trained 5 people in my county in how to deal with childhood sexual abuse. I had never heard of it, but suddenly all these other things started to make sense to me. But when I presented a case to the hospital where I was working, this is going to be a trigger alert. I just want people to know that there's some delicate information coming up if there are any children in the room.
Yeah. Yes, there was a little bit of advice earlier on. It is a good idea if people have delicate ears, should turn them away, I think.
Yes, yeah, because this is a tiny bit rough. It's not really rough, but it's a tiny bit rough. But I had a patient who was mutilating herself in her private form, and I brought that to rounds at the hospital as a possible sexual abuse victim, and they were incensed. They couldn't hear it. They felt that I was making it up. I was called all kinds of interesting names. Mm. And, you know, for future staff meetings, I was yelled at. I left pretty well every staff meeting in tears because I was seeing it everywhere and no one else was seeing it. So eventually what I started to do was develop methods to deal with childhood sexual abuse, you know, that would access the unconscious stuff, because I realized that's where the real power was.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really surprised me about your information, is that at that time, we're talking the 80s, aren't we, there was no knowledge of childhood sexual abuse at all. You refer to the period as the therapy wars.
Yes, where we were, A, there were those who believed it was happening and those who didn't. And B, of the tiny group that believed it was happening, many of them thought, well, there are only about 5 or 6 of us, but several of them thought, no, don't deal with it, because if you do, you're just going to re-traumatize the person. And my thought was, if we don't, they don't get better, and we're the people who are supposed to help them.
And do you think this was so common, this kind of refusal? Do you think there was something in the training that kind of predisposed people not to look?
I think there's something in the training of every profession that predisposes them not to look. Mm. You know, because, I mean, once you recognize what's going on and there really is an overarching control of our society that is not acting in our best interest. I think there are individuals acting in our best interest, and there are some very, very well-meaning people out there who are working hard to change things. But the overarching, the only way our whole society makes sense as well as if you recognize that at the very top, the beings that run things are not good beings, and they control everything. And as a therapist, I had never even heard of sexual abuse in my training, even though it is in the Bible. It doesn't say it's sexual abuse, but it talks about Job and his daughters and other acts of incest and so on. But the anthropology people knew about it. As therapists, we were never, or as counselors, because of new legislation in Ontario, I now have to call myself a counselor. As counselors, we were never trained in that. And I don't think that was without plan. I'm pretty certain that, we were trained to it.
Mm. It certainly worked pretty well by the sound of it, because you're still, whilst not alone, you're still one of a very rare group, aren't you, who's willing to talk about this and try and do something about it.
Well, I think now everybody talks about sexual abuse, but the satanic abuse, which I came to that realization later, there are very few people. And when you do this type of work, you have very few friends. So, nobody wants to deal with it. It sounds so bizarre.
So what was happening before people did start to, what happens still to the large number of people that are turning up who've experienced this abuse and try talking to people who don't believe, don't seem to be prepared to listen or would believe a word of it? What happens to them?
I'll give you a case example, one of my favorites. Now I have methods that will take people gently and safely from not knowing and being symptomatic to knowing and being symptom-free. And that's what we're going to talk about in our workshop in Watford. It's coming up in England on September 30th, October 1st and 2nd at the Village Hotel in Watford. You can get information on that through Eventbrite. But these methods are wonderful. I wish everybody had them. And I had one person come to me and, who was symptomatic and in bad relationships and on and on. And she uncovered her stuff and worked it through. And now she's got a great job and she's happy and, with a lovely man and so on. She had three relatives that went to a psychiatrist. And of course, training in psychiatry, they have tons and tons of training, but most of it is pharmaceutical. And, it's not that they're not brilliant. They are brilliant. It's just that they've been led in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And the direction is that you medicate. And if it's out of the norm, there are all kinds of diagnostic criteria. And of course, anybody who talks about this sounds really crazy. And they were hospitalized, so they are getting an all-expense vacation paid for by the taxpayer in the local mental hospital. Three of these women who have the same history as the client that I dealt with.
And that's one of the things we're going to realize as well, is that it is a family business, isn't it, when it's occurring. So you... What was it that made you, presumably over time, start taking seriously some of the weirder stuff that you were hearing? What was it that was striking you and made you start thinking differently?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, I had developed these methods to take people into an alpha state, because in the brainwave levels, if you go deeper than an alpha state, it can not be good for those who have had this kind of experience. So nice light regression. And, people would start telling me things, I'm seeing this and I'm seeing that. And, you don't say, well, do you see people with cloaks or whatever? At the first, I didn't even believe that. I had no experience with this. And when I had come from a medical model at the hospital, and so when people started telling me about cloak, and again, trigger alert, if anybody has starts to get uncomfortable with this, you might ask yourself why. They're telling me stories of people chanting and wearing cloaks and doing tortures and the blood drinking and, all the disgusting things that go on in those kinds of rituals. And I didn't believe it. I thought they were just crazy. I referred them back to their doctor for medication and so on. But after you've heard the stories over and over again, you have to ask, why are they telling me this? After a while, I realized, I heard enough of these that maybe there's some truth to it. And we better do this kind of quietly. Because if people are involved with this, then some people might not like the fact that we're finding it. So I remember telling everybody, like, don't talk about it. We'll do the work, but don't tell anybody that we're doing it.
I think that's another important point, isn't it? Is that it's necessary to be kind of discreet.
It's very necessary. Sadly, it duplicates the secrecy that the cult imposes. I don't know who's on your side, and I've had clients make the mistake of telling their very abusers what was going on, and that isn't fortunate. Anyway, so what happened was that this girl, she kept chatting all over town about certain, you know, how she was uncovering this stuff, and she was warned to be quiet. And I said, well, you've been talking about it, so better take a list of potential people who might harm you down to the police station, which we did. Anyway, to make a long story short, I got a life-threatening phone call, and I said, well, they said you better back off or else. And I said, well, I'm not backing off, so I guess it's plan B. Then I reported that to the police. Then my building was spray painted with symbols, and you and I have talked a little bit, Ben, about symbols and their power. But at that time, back in the early 90s, I had no idea about that. And somebody, one of my clients, told me, those are satanic symbols. I had no idea what that was about. Anyway, I reported that again to the police, and the young officer who investigated that came and told me that all my police reports were disappearing. Well, someone didn't want this information out there, and if they didn't want it out there, there had to be something wrong about it. The other thing that happened, so I started to really take it seriously. The other thing that happened was the whole thing about lizards and that sort of thing. And at that point, I really felt that I was really out of my mind. That if they weren't crazy, I was. You know, I didn't know what I put together. I had all the pieces, but I didn't have the picture. And my hairdresser in those days, different hairdresser, told me about David Icke. So I read David Icke, and there wasn't a thing in his books that I hadn't already found in my community.
And that must have made a huge difference. That must have been a real eye-opener.
Well, honestly, I sat and stared out of the window for 5 hours. I could not believe it. You know, when I realized that this was all true, it was a big shock. It took me a couple of decades to put all the information together. And to thank David Icke for his huge contribution to my career in that respect, because I don't know if I would have continued if it hadn't been for his book, The Biggest Secret.
And also The Policeman. I mean, the fact that you happened to run across one who was honest enough to tell you that your stuff was being disappeared.
Yes, prematurely deleted were his words. Mm. Yeah, exactly. But at that point, I knew it was going on. I knew it was true. Even if my colleagues were shunning me and marginalizing me and mocking me, I knew I had to continue investigating this. So that's what I did. I believed my clients and not my colleagues, because I knew they weren't seeing it.
Mm. And, one of the things that really struck me about this is the way that there seem to be families of people who were born into this system. You know, that I've heard mentions of cult leaders being the grandfather and, you know, the father trying to bring the son into the cult and all of that. It sounds to me like it's not only a family business, but that it's generational, that it may have been going on for a very long time. Is that a fair conclusion, do you think?
Absolutely. Decent families want to bring up children who are kind and loving and gentle and reward them for being good and consequence them for being bad. These families do exactly the opposite. They teach children how to torture, how to be heartless, how to kill. There are local, regional, national, and international competitions in torture, how to torture. And so all of that stuff, you know, about Mengele coming over to the United States under Operation Paperclip and teaching the CIA how to do torture, which they perpetrated through MKUltra on 2 million Americans and many, many Canadians. The MKUltra stuff is just the national version that happens in these homes. So if a child refuses to take part in these activities, they are targeted, and their children are targeted, so that their lives are kind of scuttled by these groups.
I think it's probably important at this point to mention something else that I didn't realize was so widespread and available, and that's there seem to be a whole variety of drugs, pharmaceuticals available that induce total memory loss, whatever it is that's happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Not just memory loss, but also hyperarousal, so that you'll be sexually active with almost anything. Fran, I don't know if you want to add anything to anything we've said, but
not at this point. No, thank you.
Okay, but
I think we're getting to the point where I'd like to talk to Fran a bit about the about what she described, I think, as what as devices and mechanisms. But I think before we do that, we just need to know a little bit more about how all of this is operated, because what we're talking about is entire families, husbands, wives, children, actually having stuff administered to them which sexually arouses them and makes them completely lose their memories, you know, irrespective of what happened. And one of the things that really struck me about one of the interviews I listened to was one of the men who's very bravely stepping out with you on this subject, and he said my parents had access to my kids, you know. Mm-hmm. And you just realize with total horror that if you do resist this, that it is going to be your whole family that's then undermining you, really, because it's you or them.
That's right. And they have methods of putting you into a post-hypnotic trance, so there will be like a certain touch and a certain word, and if they're delivered simultaneously, then you go instantly into trance and you can be used by them in whatever. And that gentleman you're referring to was 53 years old. He had no idea this had been happening to him.
Very striking testimony that.
But he's now able, you know, if I've done nothing else in this world, it's that he woke up to it and he protected his children and grandchildren. And he is so delighted that his grandchildren are now free of this.
Well, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask is, I mean, you know, he was apparently born into one of these families. His father was important in the cult. His grandfather was the head of the cult. He was not going to cooperate, which is one of the first things that he remembered, that they were trying to get him to kill people. And he just wasn't going to have any of it. And, of course, he's married with his own children, but he's owned by the cult. I mean, what happens to them when he's abducted or taken away on Thanksgiving for ritual torture or whatever? What happens to the people that have accidentally, through circumstance, become involved with him?
Well, if they're around, they're also victimized. You know, if they're not around, then it's just him. But, you know, there are a lot of very sad stories that come out of this.
So Fran, can we talk a little bit, because I was very struck by your use of the word devices and mechanisms in this relation. It would appear that that all manner of control is being exercised through all manner of means here. Do you want to say a bit about that for us?
Yes, it's quite remarkable. When I began working with Sandra, we would recover, let's say, the physical aspects of a particular memory. But Sandra's method was to ask one to look at the energetic things that were going on. So it's just kind of shifting your consciousness to look for the energetic things. And gradually, through this approach, we accumulated kind of the big picture that what they were doing was going after soul parts, sort of dissecting and cutting up your energy body, gaining access to it through certain means in every conceivable way. And And I think this is an area of acknowledging that the energy body actually exists, although in Western culture, I think one of the major initiatives of darkness is to kind of suppress and erase knowledge of the energy body and get rid of any of the cultures that actually do work with energy, like the native people of North America. And so we began to put together a book of all the things that we found, and I would say they number in the hundreds. Ben, if you don't mind, I'm going to start with something we learned not terribly long ago, and that is if you look in the Bible at the story of Adam and Eve, one of the creatures is ill. And if in your imagination you cut the apple in half and look at the cross section, and in your imagination use your two fingers to trace the energy lines of an apple, go up through the core of the apple, and then your two fingers separate and go around the outside of the apple and around the outside until they come back and around back up into the core. And we realized that if you imposed a little diagram of a human being on the apple, like the toroidal energy field of a human being.
Yep.
And what we then realized was that the apple is actually a metaphor for an artificial intelligence program that we were downloaded with, that we ate, that turned us from a light body into a chakra body system with a toroidal energy field. And the use of that is that the chakra energy body can be manipulated at every possible level.
And tapped.
Tapped and mined and controlled, yes.
So this is a fundamental realization, isn't it, that although we are what we're fundamentally noticing is the physical torture and stuff, what the actual aim is to be accessing our energy bodies and our vital energies and using them for whatever shadow purposes arise.
Yes, and the kind of the indirect or direct proof of this is that when you do the energy healing, like when you see what the energy thing they were going for and you energetically correct for that, your sense disappears, the fear disappears.
Yep.
And there is such improvement.
Yep, fear is one of the main things, isn't it, which keeps our energy suppressed, basically. It keeps us in our sort of reptilian fight-and-flight hind brain.
Yes, it keeps us in a very low level of consciousness. And I'm going to tell you something that I learned. I have a fairly good intellect, and I always thought that people who were smart would naturally be kind and loving, that those two things would go hand in hand. But there are two scales on which to measure the qualities of people. One is the intelligence quotient, which measures our intellect, and the other is a scale of consciousness that measures the love and connectedness that one resides at. And so this second scale, the level of consciousness, the Satanists are at a very low level of consciousness, but they're very intelligent people, by and large. And what we are trying to do is raise the level of consciousness so that you can rise. Sandra's got a great analogy. We want to have the level of consciousness rise like a hot air balloon. And in order to do that, it's the same mechanism. You've got to find those dark, heavy ballasts. You find them, you work with them, and you toss them overboard, and your level of consciousness rises.
That's a really nice analogy. I like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess what these guys are doing mostly is they're kind of putting blocks in place that prevent us from accessing our natural energies and defences. And you're, I guess, working on removing these blocks one by one as you find them. Is that broadly what's going on?
Yes, that's exactly what's going on. And the person who really universalized the practice of muscle testing, he is now deceased, but his name is Dr. David R. Hawkins. And he had a great expression. He said, "The path is narrow and steep. Waste no time." Mm. And I have to say, that expression really changed me. I mentioned before that I was severely depressed most of my life. I couldn't make a decision. And somehow when this work began, it's like I just got turned on. And I take everything that comes up, every healing, as fast as I can. If it rises up, I take it.
Do you find that you're getting better at that as time goes by?
What would you say, Sam?
Of course, I have this little British sense of humor, and I want to look at her and go, no. Such a serious topic. I think what's happening is that we're getting, we're getting better, but the work is getting deeper. And so it's like, are we learning to be cook climbers? Absolutely. But we're now hitting the pinnacle, and that's a really hard climb, you know? And, or at least what I hope is the pinnacle, because it gets much darker than this.
Is that what you're finding you're getting the opportunity to do now? You've been working with successfully for people for a number of years. Are you finding that you're able to take your investigations a bit further? I mean, I'd like to talk a bit about the muscle testing perhaps before we go for a music break. People know it's one of my favorite subjects anyway, because I was astonished. I mean, talk about saving time, Fran. Muscle testing has got to be one of the quickest ways of getting reliable answers, and I'm still amazed by it. And as you know, Sandra, I've been working with it myself for 20 years, and it still stuns me every time we do it. Would you like to say a little bit about it?
Sure. I feel the same way. Like, I'll even say to some of my clients, I'm surprised as you are every time this happens, you know, and sometimes I think, oh, it'll go this way or it'll go that way. And it does not always do what I think it's going to do. The thing that I will say about it is, one is it bypasses the conscious mind. So you can get right in quickly and deeply. Second thing, though, is that why I think a lot of the experiments with muscle testing haven't been as reliable as they could be, is because, as David Hawkins says, you need to be at a level of consciousness of around 250 in order to be able to successfully muscle test. So there is a real responsibility on the part of the muscle tester to keep themselves in a very good spiritual state. And I take that responsibility seriously. So I go to bed early, I have a good night's sleep, I wake up praying, I do my meditation, not every morning, but most mornings. I have a moment communing with nature, do my exercise, have a healthy meal, take my vitamins, think positively, and then I start my day, you know, because I want to be there in a good place. People don't just come for the words of a therapist. They come for the energy.
Yeah.
And if you're in a really good energetic spot, then you get a much better muscle test. Which will, you know, the muscle testing is just incredible. We check everything with muscle testing, you know. And your clients feel your energetics, you know. Your thoughts are translated biochemically, and they secrete through your pores in the form of pheromones. And it influences others in parts per billion. So if I'm in a really happy, happy way, those pheromones are picked up by my clients, and they feel good being here, even if the work is difficult, you know. But if I'm in a really low way, I feel like, you know, sometimes things happen. It happens to everybody. And I'll tell them, well, I'm not quite at myself today, and we'll muscle test with two to see if, you know, if I'm okay to do this. Otherwise, we'll just do like regular talking therapy. But you have to walk your talk when you're doing energetic work.
And it is an energetic challenge that we're facing, which in a way, because of the kind of solutions we have to these things, is perhaps better news than if it was a simply physical challenge, is one of my instincts. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think so too. You know, I mean, I really feel that the whole universe, it's like there's an omniscient, omnipotent, all-loving intelligence out there that guides us step by step if we would only pay attention to it. You know, it isn't just about going to confession or going to church on a Sunday morning. You know, it's about living and walking with the invisible, with that creator being. I hope that answered your question, Ben. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. It certainly does. I think that it's effectively suggesting that there's been a kind of, if you like, a false division put between spirit and matter. We've been taught that there are spiritual places and places where we should feel better about ourselves. But in fact, walking without fear and with equanimity, as if everybody and every place is sacred, yields really good results.
That's right. And if you take everything as a lesson, you know, it's like the analogy that I sometimes use is if you're playing a sport with someone, like if you're playing tennis and they have a really good shot and you can't return that shot because it's too fast or, you know, too bouncy or whatever, then you don't blame them. What you have to do is, you know, improve your game to be able to deal with it. And it's the same with this. This whole society is designed to trip us up. It's the most marvelous test of our spirituality. Respect, you know, it's like, okay, this is today's challenge. What would it take to deal with this successfully? Mm. And that is a huge question that I ask myself many times a day. Okay, what do I need to do to get through this one? You know, and I don't take it personally. It's like, this is a lesson. So what do I need to do in order to successfully deal with this lesson?
Yes, and as a result of approaching things that way, we do get more information from our environment, or what you call, I think, the psychic intranet, which perhaps we can get into when we've had a couple of tunes.
Sure.
Okay.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Well, we're going to, we've been listening, folks, to Sandra Fecht and to Fran talking about ritual satanic abuse, and hopefully after a couple of tunes we'll come back with some of the techniques that are being used to improve the situation. And we've got about 5 or 6 minutes of music, so we can all go and get some tea or something, and we're going to kick off with the Dr. Rock favourite, Screaming Miss Jackson, and the Slap Your Mama big band doing 21st Century Satan. It's a song about how easy it is to steal your soul. We'll be back with you in 5 or 6 minutes or so. You're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on raconteursnews.com, and that was the Buffalo Skinners and Lose My Soul. I think the doctor's done a good job at selecting applicable tracks. And we're talking to Fran and to Sandra tonight about ritual satanic abuse. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. It's all still looking cool here. Fran, I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about these devices and mechanisms that are being installed during these ceremonies or whatever. What do you think is the most important thing we need to understand about them?
I think one of the things to understand is that they are so complex that people who are satanically ritually abused are never intended to know they were abused, let alone have any chance of healing. And I'll give you some examples of that by the strangeness and the variation in what they can do. But I will also say that I absolutely, fully know that spirit is at work in this, that there are dark forces at work. There is the light force that Sandra talked about, the huge creative power of the universe, that we are actually all created in that image. We are right now, no matter what we've been through, right this, we are all perfect. We are all unfathomably powerful, but you can't control beings like that. So you've got to make them believe they're not powerful, and you have to steal their energy. Mm-hmm. So there's so much good that can come out of that. So shall I just start by talking about a mechanism?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. So this one we called scalar interference pattern in the space within atoms. And we found that there is, it's actually one of the crown princes of hell whose predilection is to be able to cast scalar interference patterns into the space within atoms. But in order to see how this affects our energy, let's talk for a moment about the space within atoms. So if in high school, in high school science, we've all learned about the nucleus of the atom and the electrons. So if we visualize the nucleus of an atom, a hydrogen atom, one proton, the size of a basketball, the electron would actually be 20 miles away or 40 kilometers away. And so matter is really mostly space. And physicists say that it's the space in the atom that holds all the power. They talk about numbers, astronomical numbers, like that there is more energy in the space within a single hydrogen atom than a trillion times the energy of all the matter in the universe out to a radius of 2,000 billion light years.
That's a hell of a sort of energy to be tapping or messing with, isn't it?
It is. And so when we think that, like if we go down in scale, and we go, like we keep dividing that by 10, and we get down to 10 to the minus 33rd meters, that's called the Planck scale. And it is talked about as being the field of the universal field of infinite potential, the mind of God, and that field in the space is able to manifest by folding on itself and creating things. Now, let's talk for just a moment about what a scalar interference pattern is. So we're used to like interference patterns on the top of water as waves. And if we drop a stone in a pond, the pattern spreads out. It traverses through time and space. But a scalar interference pattern does not traverse through space. When it's cast, it stays in place and it traverses through time. So once you've got one of those things on you, it stays with you. The interference pattern is active on you.
Wow. And this is a sort of ceremonial, energetic kind of implant.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes. So how does that affect us? If we think of that beautiful Planck scale that can manifest by folding in on itself, and then we imagine that all of a sudden it gets all wrinkled up because the scalar interference pattern that has been cast upon it, that would really impede the ability of the cosmic mind to manifest through us.
Wow.
It would be extremely disorganizing to our energetic potential.
So it's not only cutting off our ability to communicate, it's also cutting off the ability of the big it to communicate with us.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And so in this particular case, the thing that it most significantly disconnects us from is love. That the big L, love, right. The universal power of love.
I've heard it said that the real opposite of love is fear, and that's where it puts us.
I think the real opposite of love is indifference.
Wow, yeah.
And so that would break down our connection to every single thing on every single level. Very disabling.
Yeah.
And in our case, the particular healing for this was sound therapy, like listening to the frequencies of love for a certain number of sessions, an hour at a time, for 10 times. And that was the thing that counteracted that.
Okay, so that answers, Susie's got a question in the chat box there. She says, any way of getting rid of these implants? And that basically, that one was got rid of by using frequency, because presumably the actual scalar thing itself, although it's on a different scale, it's still a frequency, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
And part of the reason that we have to use several sessions is because we have to retrain the energetic system to hold that frequency, and it's called entraining. We have to entrain. And you, if I can sort of answer Susie's question, I don't know what her particular difficulty is, even if she has it, but there are 1,000 ways to get rid of the thing. I'll add a little later, but each person is unique. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It may be a one-size-fits-several, but not everybody.
Yeah, and that's a pretty devastating piece of magic to be using. Are all the things that they're doing of that kind of sophistication?
Not all of them. Earlier you asked the question about whether we progress maybe in terms of what we're dealing with, and maybe in the healing methods that are discovered. And I will tell you that in the beginning, things are fairly simple to resolve. You always sort of get, well, maybe not always, but often get the easiest things first.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the very session that you found the thing in, you may be able to correct it. But what we're finding now is that the healing times get longer, perhaps more complex. We may be dealing with some things now that we've known about for a year, and we still haven't completed the healing for them. So you encounter different entities, both on the dark and the light side. You might have to work with a larger number of people in order to create the healings.
Mm. So I guess another important point to make is that these energetic entities are also real. You know, because I was told only this evening, just before I came on the show, that there was an article in The Guardian recently, and also I gather some sort of Babylon Broadcasting documentary, which was suggesting that all of this stuff is just being, like, put into people's minds by psychiatrists.
Fran's looking at me, so I'll take that question. I mean, this is an echo of the false memory people. And the false memory people, when we were dealing with sexual abuse, was actually started by people who were pedophiles. And if you look up the history, Mr. Freyd, F-R-E-Y-D, who was the prime mover behind this, and Ralph Underweger, Ph.D., were both accused pedophiles. And they had the moxie to start the false memory syndrome. And I see that this is rearing its head again. They used all the same methods in terms of, well, the therapists are putting that stuff into you, and they want to make more money, and blah, 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 blah. Let me just say, in defense of all this, I never heard of any of this stuff before. It is something that emerges from the client, you know, and they'll ask a question, and I'll get something, and I'll ask a question, get something, and it's real teamwork, and we muscle test everything to make sure that it's going along the way that it should. So I say that those who say that that therapists or counselors are implanting this have a vested interest in this information not coming to the fore.
Yes, I think that would be a fair conclusion to reach.
And also, Ben, I would suggest that the physical world is largely an illusion. if most of the substance of an atom is actually the space, we are mostly space. And I think the entities are real and they operate in that space.
Yes. Yeah.
You asked earlier, what was real? You know, are they real? These entities real? And, you know, are stars real to somebody who is visually handicapped? Mm-hmm. They're still there, but they can't see them. And we have been trained over the centuries not to look at the invisible world. Anywhere the Europeans went in their imperialistic surge, the incidence of psychic events went down. They could no longer see with their third eye, the people that they you know, conquered and frightened. And the incidence of alcoholism, incest, and disease went skyrocketing. We all had this ability at one point, like 2,000 years in Britain. This is how it was done, you know, 2,000 years ago in Britain. But we have lost that ability, and we were so traumatized by the witch burnings where between 3 and 9 million women were, and mostly women, some men, were burned for knowing this stuff, that we have a genetic memory of fear not to go near it anymore. Mm. And I'm saying get that ability back. Start imagining what it is that you see that's there. I had one client I worked with who, you know, at one point we would both be aware that there was something in the space. And we would each draw what we were seeing. And when we were finished our drawings, we would pull it up and show one another just to verify that we were both seeing the same thing. You know, so it's fascinating once you start testing out your ability to become, to increase your perceptual level.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because as you've made very clear that you've had to kind of put this whole thing together frame by frame. But the thing you've just described is a very interesting personal proof delivered to you in the process of your mission. And I think that's a really great demonstration of what we're talking about when we say that synchronicity shows more of itself, or the environment will give you hints as to where to go, or your intuition will. That, I think, is a great example of how that works, because it, to you, it is proof, although, you know, you rightly say all we've got is the stories, really. We can't be absolutely certain because somehow all the proof is disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I've had people from the military tell me, well, we found this stuff and we passed all the evidence to our superiors, and somewhere along the chain of command, everything went away.
Yeah, once it reaches a man with a shiny peak on his cap, it's no longer deemed to be relevant.
No.
And, of course, these techniques, as well as being sophisticated on the molecular level, and what Franz just said to me is total news to me. I'd be very interested in finding out more about that level of things. But one of the things that struck me is the sophistication of making witnesses, victims, whatever, making them appear unreliable, making parents appear complicit in their children's abuse, and then kind of wiping all of this from the memory. That is that, again, widespread, this sort of real careful construction of the scene for these people?
I think there are different levels of ability within these cults and groups, Ben. And how widespread it is, I can't say. I would say that probably a third of the population is involved with this satanic ritual abuse, either through being complicit or perpetrators or victims.
God, a third of the population.
Yeah, I think so. How do they make parents appear complicit? If you give them a drug that makes them laugh, and then the child is being hurt in front of that parent, and they're sitting there with a stupid grin on their face, that alienates that child, as you can well imagine. And that is one way that they do it, that or mind control. The other thing, this business of confounding witnesses, I've had cases where people were hypnotized into thinking one person did the abuse and it was somebody else, or they acted out, in one case, a drama with a child where they gave the child something to make their belly ache. and then said to them, you're having a baby, you're having a baby, and drugged the child and pulled something from between their legs, and it was a baby. And this girl will go on forever saying, when I was 5, I had a baby. She didn't have a baby. They made it look that way. I think sometimes, and this is getting a little into the more extreme cases, but I've heard many, many, many times of women being raped by the reptilians, and the gestation of children, rather, being raped because they have a small womb in which to carry the offspring. And, you know, who's going to believe that? Nobody is going to believe that. But I've heard that story so many times. I was raped by this being, and, you know, then the tummy gets a little bit bigger. The gestation period is a lot shorter. They then give birth to something, you know. So it's possibly that. The other thing is that they tell people things that happened when they did. They tell people things that happened when they didn't. They tell people things that didn't happen when they didn't, and they tell people things that didn't happen when they did. So, and they hypnotize that into people, so it's always, always confusing.
And the victims become the cover-up.
Yes, and they're so mixed up and confused that it's sometimes really hard to get to the bottom of the story. If you add to that this whole idea of frequency control and mind control and triggers, like I have one client who came to me, and I was thinking about her today, actually, and I only saw her for 2 sessions. The first session she came and she was telling me about how her father, who ranked in a paramilitary group, had given her a phone where he could track every decision she made. And I said, well, that's really nice, and maybe you want to leave that phone at home the next time you come here. The next, I saw her once, I guess, because the next 2 times she had an appointment with me, she said, Sandra, I'm 2 hours away. This is a professional woman. She said, I'm 2 hours away. I don't know how I got here or why I'm here, but I know my appointment's in 5 minutes, and there's no way in the world I'm going to make it. She was mind-controlled into driving, you know, 2 hours away so that there was no way. And after the second appointment, I said to her, I'm sorry, but they got a bigger hold on you than I have at this moment. And
I guess that's still the case with some of the people you're dealing with, is it? You say that a lot of them are actually free from current access by the cults and stuff, but I guess you're still coming across people who are too active and too tightly involved to take advantage of what you're suggesting.
That is the truth. And one of the things I would suggest to anybody who's working with this population is always to muscle test whether or not they're still being accessed and whether or not they have any homicide or suicide programs, you know, and if so, what are the conditions under which those homicide or suicide programs would be enacted, you know, so that they might be, you know, mind controlled into suiciding if they ever talk to anybody or to hurt the person they're talking to.
Wow. And the muscle testing reveals this.
Yes, as long as you're at the muscle tester is at a high enough level of consciousness. So, well, anyway, yeah. Go ahead.
I don't want to let the reptilian bit go by. I think it's something that we need to deal with as well, because that is presumed once you come to grips with the sexual abuse and then the ritual satanic sexual abuse. Presumably, the lizards came as pretty much a last straw, didn't they? How did your inner you respond to the rumors of them?
Well, at first, I remember the first person who ever told me that, and or at least the first person I consciously remember. I think people before that had told me, and I just let it go by. But I regressed this one fellow, and he said, I'm in a room full of, and he paused, and he went, dinosaurs? And he's trying to find a word to put on it, but he could not find the correct word, because he didn't get to his marital issue problems. So having been, you know, very well trained, I turned to him and said, look, quit avoiding, get back to the issue, you know. And now I realize he's given me the goods, like way back then. That was in 89 or something, but I could not hear it. Instead of just letting it be client-led, I was forcing him into my paradigm.
And I think that's another very, very important thing is that no matter how much stuff it is that we think we've learned and how much we think we've got some sort of mastery over our own slide response, there's always something like you that what you said there, I just didn't hear it.
Yes,
We have to be listening really carefully, don't we?
Yeah, not sort of blink it out. So now I have a whole raft of sort of really odd things that are, you know, happening to people. I don't know if they happen more regularly or if it was unique to this one person, but, you know, you kind of keep it in the back of your mind. I had this one fellow, and, you know, he was a bit of a crabby Appleton. And, oh, yeah, that's putting it nicely. But what it turned out is that every single day his chakras were being relocated and interfered with every day. So he never knew from one day to the next what he'd be like when he woke up as, you know, what he'd be like when he woke up. It was crazy. And so once he got that straightened out, and I have to admit, he was in a group and it was another client that said, like, we did some work on it as individually, but there was this other client that said, I think I can help you out if you need this energy thing on you. And so we all agreed she did it. And he then became calm. And it was like somebody who never had a warm coat suddenly putting on a warm coat and going, this is warm, but it feels really weird. And so he went around, you know, for a while, like saying, I feel really strange. I'm not getting angry anymore. But he is still calm. I met with somebody yesterday, and they said, yeah, he's still doing fine.
Do you know what sort of physical device he donned? Was it geometric in nature?
I'm not sure if we did any geometry with that one. Hmm. But, you know, the gift that Fran has, or several gifts besides her, like really sharp intelligence and asking brilliant questions, is that she documents, remembers, and connects all of this stuff. So I usually defer to her on that. Do you remember?
No, because I wasn't involved with
that particular part of it.
No.
Okay. So, no, sorry, Ben, don't remember.
That's all right.
The information comes whipping through me, and it does a whistle stop for that client, and then I let it go. And
God, you must have seen so much stuff, though.
Yeah, a ton. There was one other thing I wanted to add, like a couple of things here. One is that I know that the people who run the world are technologically 1,000 years ahead of where we are. So it makes us look stupid, you know. Because we can't even describe some of the events, like people being taken from one location to 1,000 miles away in a heartbeat, you know, put through what feels like 2 weeks of training and then brought back. And, you know, the time it would take to have a cup of tea, they've had 2 weeks of weapons somewhere.
That's another particularly disturbing thing, is finding that there's people out there who apparently have weapons competencies about which, again, they are completely and totally unaware.
Absolutely. You know, and how they play with time, you know, that it can seem like normal plodding time to us, but somehow they play with time so that they get a little bubble and do whatever within that time period. So that's really interesting to me. Another small point I wrote down was the application of fluoride. Fluoride calcifies the pineal gland, which is also one of the ways with which we access the divine. So if you go to vote on whether or not to have fluoride in your community drinking water, vote no. Another thing is the demonic possession that goes on. People don't believe in spirits and so on. We've been taught that's all just nonsense. You can't prove it. Well, actually, you kind of can prove it, but and we take drugs and alcohol in excess. I'm not saying that alcohol in moderation is a bad thing, but if you get drunk, it's like throwing the crown chakra door open and saying to anything that is not of good intent, hey, you can come in and live in here. And I've had clients where, you know, they've been drunk a few times in a week, and something has slipped inside of them, and suddenly their habits change. So I had this one person who started eating a whole bunch of junk food and watching soap operas, which was not previously part of her habit. And she had been drinking that week, and once we got rid of the spirit that had slipped in during these drinks, drinking sessions, she went back to normal instantly.
Again, really brilliant, because that's a great demonstration, isn't it, of what can be done. And actually, it is something that I've become a lot more aware of. And in fact, I've had a couple of emails recently suggesting that the appearance of energy attachments on people or entities or whatever they are is becoming really, really widespread. Possibly because, you know, it's not just alcohol, is it? It's wheat and sugar and tobacco and the totally, totally prevalent cocaine, and just all designed to do the same job, it would seem to me.
Well, when we are so ungrounded, we have so much of an external locus of control, we feel so bad about ourselves so much of the time, and we're out of control with our own lives. I guess some people turn to that. And, you know, what we need to do is structure our lives in such a way that we are helping ourselves. We cannot depend on others to do it for us. Life is a self-job. So you really have to maximize your time, you know, take care of your body, your emotions, your relationships, and your spirit and energetics. And one of the things we do at the workshop that's coming up in Watford on September 30th, October 1st and 2nd, the Village Hotel, is to teach people what are the basics of their energetic field, how to muscle test, and how to balance their energy field. Because if you walk in balance, then you feel good. The energetics controls your thinking, your feeling, your physical well-being, your organs, and your level of energy. But if your energetics are out of sorts, and this is done on a deliberate individual way with the kinds of experiences that some of my clients have had, and it's done in a general way with chemtrails and so on, then you don't feel good. You feel absolutely horrible. But the thing is to notice the difference between feeling absolutely wonderful and at the game, and you're not at the top of the game. Because if you're not at the top of the game, there's an energetic thing that's out, and then you may want to find, A, how to correct it, and B, what's the reason for it? Is it that they're playing with the magnetics in the ley lines, or that the cosmology is changing, or that you ate bread and that didn't agree with you, or, you know, that somebody wore the same color shirt as the person who abused you? You've got to figure that out, sway it out, or tap it out, according to Gary Craig's emotional freedom technique, or do EMDR, or whatever method, hold a gemstone or mineral, smell an essential oil, take a plant, a herb that works, whatever you need to do, because everything is a frequency, and every single frequency is designed to heal something. So you just have to find the frequency that works for you.
And the muscle testing is pretty much a direct road to such information.
That's exactly it. Yes.
And how important, I mean, we've talked a little bit about equanimity and peacefulness. One of the things that we tend to emphasize is the need for forgiveness, that there isn't actually any choice in the matter. If there's a choice between forgiveness and revenge, then forgiveness is what we should be practicing.
Well, absolutely. Whatever you think, like the mouth is the overflow of the heart, whatever you think, you put that vibration into your own energy field. Whatever words you use, that frequency goes into your energy field. So if you're thinking, you know, bitterness and revenge, that's what you become. You know, the forgiveness is not done, it's also for you. And if you're thinking, well, yes, they did that to me. I mean, I've had somebody do something absolutely dreadful to me, which took many years for me to get over. But in the end, I'm glad I'm through that, because had I hung on to that anger and bitterness, that would have shaped me. And then I would have been within the reach of all these lower vibrational entities. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, I was able to transcend that. Because I don't want to be in that reach. I want to be in my love and joy and peace. So it's our duty to say, okay, what does it take to get beyond this?
So people might come to you, it seems to me they quite often do, because they're experiencing, say, an unaccountable anger. And you, I guess what you're trying to do is account for the anger, and that's basically, once that's done, so that symptom will be seen away.
Once you understand the triggers and the programs and the events that led to it, then when that is resolved, the symptom goes away, yes.
Yeah. What about the importance of our own innate abilities, you know, our own, I think what you called once, street smarts, and this business of knowing our own thoughts, spending a bit of time examining what it is we're thinking and seeing if we can account for it, or whether there maybe isn't such a rational basis for it. That's a fairly important piece of work, isn't it?
Yes, I think much of the work you can do on your own, just, you know, with meditation and examining your own thinking, improving your diet, and so on. But, yeah, I think therapy and counseling has to work from two directions. One is from the outside in, where you're doing all the behavioral, the verbal, the cognitive, the conscious cognitive changes. And one is from the deep unconscious, where you find all of this stuff that you've stored away that you previously couldn't access because it was too scary. And you needed somebody to sort of guide you through it and say, look, that was then, this is now, you're an adult now, you've got adult ways of thinking, and you didn't make all this garbage, but it's your job to take it out. So let's start just taking out the garbage, and you minimize the drama. You have to minimize the drama.
And Fran, do you discover when you're looking into the subconscious to find these difficult things that there are, if you like, jewels in there, there's things that can be used as well?
I have to say I am overwhelmingly focused on the jewels. This journey has been so miraculous. It is really hard for me to describe it to you. It's like you're willing to take this path. You're willing to take it step by step. And my experience of it is that Spirit hands you things. Spirit tells you where to go. And if your arms are out, it's almost like the miracles are falling
all around.
Yeah, because you get so much from Spirit.
Yeah, and the more receptive you are, the more you find.
Yes, I just cannot tell you how amazing this is.
Something I am interested in is I've been told many times, and I believe myself, that that lots and lots of abilities were actually natural to our original design, such as the ability, I don't know, to bilocate, telepathy, teleportation, all sorts of things that are treated as paranormal by orthodoxy. And I've realized that a lot of people who experience alien abductions, as well as coming back feeling sick, also come back sometimes with their psychic abilities slightly enhanced, their ability to see energy, to see what's going on, maybe a bit of precognition, that kind of thing. Have you experienced any of that?
I certainly have, yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, again, that's one of the most important things about talking about this subject is that these simple things that we would have known about in the past, like you say, diet, exercise, sunshine, watching our own thoughts, these are all things that are entirely within our own power to adjust, especially, you know, if we've got somebody to talk to, which I personally think is also really important that this stuff is discussed, because there seems to be an emphasis to me, generally speaking, on not talking about the shadow, not addressing it, and I don't think it's really worked well for us.
I think that we were so labored with dealing with this society that, you know, it's like one more discouraging thing. Yeah. And instead of being free in our society, being loved, being supported, and knowing that we are fundamentally good, but there is a dark spot that you need to address.
Yeah, and Ben, I would say that it goes back for me to acknowledging that we are these incredible, powerful, beautiful, pure beings, creations of the great Creator, exactly in His image, and we've only been fooled into thinking and accepting a lesser level of consciousness and they're really piling it on, that's for sure. Mm. But when you start to remove those blocks, I think you mentioned earlier, blocks to who you really are, your true essence, then all those powers you mentioned, that's our natural heritage.
So we're effectively dealing with a kind of dimensional entrapment.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And I do want to just add to the targeted individuals that have given me phone calls and emails in the last while. My email, by the way, is Sandra, S-A-N-D-R-A, Fecht, F as in Frank, E-C-H-T, at rogers.com, R-O-G-E-R-S. And many of them are reporting being targeted when you talk about this entrapment thing with frequencies that are making them do things that they have no desire to do and making circumstances in their lives very, very difficult. And I've met people who have gone from $1 million a year jobs onto nothing within the space of a year, and they have no idea why. And I think they have something that the powers that be really want, you know. And I've met people who were brilliant in IT whose all of their computers collapse every single day. You know, it's just they're a small group, I think, but the tragedy that is being perpetrated on their lives, we all have to sit up and pay attention to that and say, what is happening here? And why is it happening?
And realize to a great extent that we are all every day being forced to do, well, we're coerced into doing things that we don't want to do.
Yes. And I read a thing recently, I don't know if I can put my hands on it quickly, by a California PhD, I think I have it here, who is, hold on, his name is Dr. Colodzin, C-O-L-O-D-Z-I-N, a psychologist in California who is recognizing that the diagnosis of schizophrenia and things that she really is being, his client, he realized, was really being externally controlled by implants that are affecting her health. And he says there are machines out there that will pick up the unusual frequencies from microchip implants. And there's another, like there's a targeted individual that is in touch with me online who says that you can tell if you have nanotechnology in you from the chemtrails if you expel grape juice into a cup. I didn't talk about this earlier today, did
I? No, you didn't, no.
You know, talk about this 100 times, you kind of get confused.
Yeah.
Anyway, and you expel it into a clear cup.
Wait, you swish it around your mouth and kind of gargle with it. Grape juice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, all of this is quite repulsive to me since I don't do body fluids.
And Sandra's actually really glad this isn't a Skype, like with a visual.
Fran was threatening me that we may have to demo this. I don't think so. Not my style.
We did bring grape juice today.
Sounds like it might be useful stuff. So you swill it around in your mouth.
You expel it into a clear dish, and then there will be some substance that will form at the edge of the dish. You spray it with isopropyl rubbing alcohol, and if those little things at the edge of the dish to come alive and swim towards one another, you've been infected with nanotechnology. And I'm not at all clear on what all nanotechnology does, but I certainly don't want anything biologically nanotech in my body that's, you know, controlling me, giving information back, receiving information, whatever it is they do with it, you know.
And have you come across anybody who needs that sort of thing dealing with?
Well, tonight we're going to do the swish test.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a new subject for me, but it's something else to keep my eyes open for. Any therapists out there, instead of just drugging people and telling them, you know, they're crazy, start investigating it. If this is part of their reality, you have to meet the client where they are. Mm. And start seeing what other creative ways you can deal with this.
My experience of that is that it works really well. I was a case study for a homeopath for 3 years, and she was of the opinion that it didn't really matter what bad habits I had; they weren't her problem. That what she was doing would sort all of it out, and she was right. You know, she treated the whole person. She wasn't in any way judgmental about any of it, and one way or the other, many over those 3 years of my my less favourable habits, shall we say, just kind of faded away, which was really great.
Of course, I want to tease you and say, "Oh, do tell."
perhaps when we meet over a beer
in Watford.
Yeah, in Watford. Oh, I can't wait to go back to Watford. So one of the great things, we've clearly got something. Many of the techniques can actually be taught to all manner of people, and that is your main mission, it seems to me, is to be teaching other people about this and how to deal with it.
Absolutely. I mean, I am thrilled at the brilliance that Fran is showing in all of this, and I see the information that Fran is gathering as the way of the future, and that a lot of people will be helped through that. And when I think of the other people out there who could also be on a path of finding their truth and helping others, it's very exciting for me. But when I think of those that are in the hospital as a result of telling their truth and not being believed, that's really a loss for all of us. So the more people that know how to use these methods and develop them in combination with what they already know, like, good on you. Let's all go for it.
And Ben, I'll give that a plug too, because if you go to a therapist who has no idea what is wrong, you're never going to get healing. But if the therapist can actually address the energetic level, then the healing that you get is unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah. The only way to go really is to synthesize the light and shadow inside, and that sometimes takes a bit of skilled help from outside. But it's clear from what Sandra is saying that you and many other people have managed to take on board your own healing, and you're not only learning a lot about your own situation, you and Sandra now between you are learning a lot about the surrounding situation as well, which I think is a real game changer. You know, apocalypse is supposed to mean an unveiling, and that's exactly what you're doing.
Yes, yeah.
And I guess that, you know, one way or the other, there do seem to be an awful, awful lot of children involved in all of this, and anything we can do to protect them and bring them back into a position of safety has got to be, again, one of our main aims. They are our future.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would just like to encourage everyone that there is hope, that there are many things you can do on a minute-by-minute, daily basis to cheer yourself up, listen to yourself speak, use really good words, find, even if you're not in a good way, find even a moment of joy in your life. Maybe you have good vision and you can see something that you really enjoy, or you know how to play music, you know that you've tuned to 432 hertz, the Verdi tuning.
Yeah.
Whatever, but there are always invitations to be joyous around us, and you just have to find them. Many people say, well, there's nothing good in my life, and there are 1,000 things that are good every minute. You know, what we have to do is look for them and appreciate them and develop that attitude of gratitude, and that will blossom within you and create a beautiful life.
And I think it also raises your level of consciousness, like it raises the level of love at which you can connect, and you can move yourself beyond their reach. I went to holistic nutrition school because I wanted to make a real change in life. I was going to find out about food and its ability to make a change, which is remarkable. But that school had a saying that really changed my life, and that expression was that we are body, mind, and spirit, and that the causal level of all imbalance is spirit level, and that if the, like, our recognition of the energetics or the spirit level isn't made, it just keeps manifesting into mental, into emotional, until it finally lands with a bang in the physical level. So that's pretty interesting to come from a school of nutrition.
Yeah, and of course nutrition is something that your standard medical doctors, I gather, don't really get any information about at all, and there you are saying that it's really, it's absolutely the key, it's the one of the key links providing the energy between our physical body and our psychic and energetic bodies.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's a probably as suitable a place as any as any to leave it. Basically, I suppose, enjoy, as you say it, Sandra, enjoy the experience of being you, and perhaps learn to say, I don't need an institution, you need to find out what's going on.
I love that. Yes, you're totally right. Yeah, enjoy. I usually say that to clients, like, just show yourself a great time while you're here on the planet, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's completely fabulous. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming on. And thanks really for the work you're doing and the calmness and sincerity you bring to it. It's made what might have been a very difficult couple of weeks a lot easier, your approach. And I'm personally very, very grateful to you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
We'll really look forward to seeing you in England.
Yes. Yep, really look forward to meeting up with you in Watford, and perhaps at some point when we've had time to calm down a bit afterwards, we can meet up again on the radio and talk about how it went and what we learnt.
That would be delightful.
Well, that was completely fabulous, both of you. Thank you very much. I'm going to put on a couple of tunes for the people, and I'll be back with you a bit. I'll probably play a few tunes after the end of the show just to give you something to calm down to. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Sandra and to Fran. And here's at least one little story about a man who took on the devil and won, because it appears whilst the devil has all the good tunes, he's not much of a fiddle player. So here's the Charlie Daniels Band. I'll be back with you soon. Motorhead there and Don't Need Religion. Of course, famous preacher's son there. Well, that was exciting. That was really amazing. As you probably gathered, I should be going down to Watford, because I'm going to go down there and talk a little bit about our use of geometry and muscle testing and reconnecting electromagnetic circuits to earth, air, fire, water and ether. Because it turns out that Sandra does a lot of similar stuff. She's realised the power of the geometry. She's using the Chinese elements rather than the Western classical elements. But it was one of the things that struck me listening to her, was that it's become her conclusion that if she comes across people who are disconnected elementally on that kind of level, then that is pretty much a sure sign that they have been subjected to this kind of ritual abuse. And of course the ceremonies, which I've now been talking about on the radio for 5 years and working with myself for 20 years as an energetic response to this, indicate that everybody has been divorced somehow from the elemental nature of the world, which implies to me, as the introduction to that original ceremony said, that at some point we have all been fecked with, basically. And whether or not that's the case, we know that we're all being coerced into doing things that we wouldn't want to do. We know that the nominal money we're handing over is being used to wreak all sorts of mayhem all over the world. And that in its way is trauma-based mind control. It's what's happening to all of us. And, you know, we heard from Sandra that in 2000 and in 2008, whenever it was, or the 1980s, that was it, that the words kind of sexual abuse just didn't occur. And it took ages to get people to believe that it was happening and to get therapists involved and all of that. And now exactly the same thing is happening effectively with the ritual satanic abuse. You get the same response for bringing that up as you would have done in the 1980s for bringing up sexual abuse. And, you know, the question would have to be what's coming next. And although we didn't get into it too much, I think there will be a further conversation, I hope, with Sandra on the subject of blood-quaffing reptilian entities, because she's got a lot to say about that as well. I think if you go to Freeman TV on YouTube and put in "Are Reptilians Real?", you'll get a fabby interview between Sandra and Freeman Fly, I think it is, which really make your hair stand on end, really. So 10 out of 10 to them. Very much looking forward to spending a bit of time with them and obviously perhaps learning a bit more of the techniques involved. And then, like I say, hopefully we can have another chat. In the meantime, I'm going to hang around for half an hour or so because I think that was probably pretty hairy stuff. And we'll play a few tunes. We had this one fairly recently. The Chumbawamba is Enough, Enough is Enough. But I figure it's absolutely the bloody tune to play at this moment because enough is enough. And, of course, it's the whole bloody thing is ecclesiastical. The courts, the universities, the all of it. The whole lot, the banks. So It's not just a major, sideline interest for some people. It is the basis of the whole thing. And bloody enough is enough.